Synthaholics, I'm your host, Aaron O'Brien. I have with me my co-host. Is that the Joker? Is that you, Joker? Oh my god. Is something funny?
I'm gonna pass you my card.
Oh. You're just crazy. Okay. Well, my co-host is not the Joker. It's actually our good friend David Duncan.
Misa back.
David, we got to see the Joker, and we survived.
We didn't get killed by incels, believe it or not. And I didn't see an incel message in the movie at all, also, believe it or not, which is really strange.
No, I didn't see that either. We also have two wonderful trailers to talk about for Star Trek Discovery Season 3 and Star Trek Picard. And we also have our first short trek of the new season.
And a preview for Short Trek. There's a lot of Star Trek in this episode about Joker, so if you stick around until then if you don't want to hear about Joker.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the Picard trailer. What a lot more information came through on this one.
Well, he's got a dog and his name's Number One, so that's super important.
Yes. Yeah, that's a big thing.
Yeah, because like the dog wasn't in the first two trailers, and like it was like on the freaking poster and everyone's been wondering where the doggy is. There he is.
Where'd that dog one. Go?
So we get
the beginning. We're on the vineyards, and Data's painting a picture, and he asked Picard. Oh, and they're all wearing their older uniforms from back in the
season 3 uniforms.
And he asks him to finish the picture, and Picard says, "I don't know how," and he's like, "I think you do.
I know you, so, do, sir." It's not a spot, believe it or not.
Right, and then we're getting shots of some kind of attack. They look like they could be Romulan ships, but we don't know. And so that's obviously a dream sequence. And Picard's saying that you can't run from your past, basically, because that's dangerous. And this is where the girl shows up, needing his help.
I need your help.
I need help. And then he goes to Starfleet, the Federation, looking for help, and they take him through this huge data center, which looks like there's other datas.
Yeah, a data center. I see what you did there.
No, but there's multiple datas.
Data. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of Noonian Soongish type robots.
So Measure of Man.
I guess they forgot about that one.
They forgot. We don't need to know about that. We definitely have that going on. And then we have Picard petitioning one of the admirals and basically saying this is what the Federation is about and we got to stand up for it. And she's like, this is
go get a jalopy. We're not going to give you one of our ships, Picard. This is exactly what we were predicting she'd say.
Yeah, well, she also said this is not your house anymore. So basically saying whatever you thought the Federation was in the past is not that anymore.
You're going back to the Federation funny farm, Picard. This is not your Federation. House. That's your house.
Right. And then we have a conversation between Picard and somebody else saying that he wants to go back out into space, start this whole thing again.
Sounds like Bones. Like, you want to go back out in the cold again? Is Bones still alive somehow?
No, Bones died, unfortunately, especially by this point. Yes. And then he goes to I guess this is the character that's supposed to be like the code breaker, and like she's supposed to be some kind of like hacker or something, and that he's saying, is this another rescue mission? Or and
so apparently Picard enlists her help on multiple occasions.
Right. And then there's some scientists. If she's
new Guinan that they used to fuck in the last like 20 years or something like that.
Him and Guinan got together. Then he's showing this
new chick,
and he's recruiting everyone else. So it looks like there's some young scientist that says that's her life work and that she needs to come with them. And then there's the Romulan Legolas character.
Yeah, doing sword fighting. It looks like Picard gets into that sword fighting too.
And yes, a little bit, and then we get sort of the Han Solo character, who's the captain of some ship that
and he must smokes be cigars, using. Which is great. He's going to be my favorite character, I think.
Very, very unhealthy for that time period, don't you think? Don't you think they would have gotten rid of cigars?
No, you can replicate anything.
You can replicate a good cigar, a good Cuban.
Mark Twain was trying to get some replicated, and then hell, like the next episode, the Fistful of Datas, which is either the next episode or a couple episodes after the Mark Twain episode, Troy is then now smoking cigars because she thought it was such a good idea.
Yeah, interesting. Troy just went back on her old thing, saying we don't need cigars; we're the future.
Yeah, it's pretty much. She said that, and like an episode later, she's smoking. It's hilarious.
You know what? Fuck the future. Cigars are where it's at.
Hey, Samuel Clemens knows what he's doing. I think I should listen to Samuel Clemens.
Next thing, we get a picture of the Borg cube. It looks like that section of the Borg cube was like blown up, and there's like some kind of force shield up around it.
Yeah, it's some of the blue stuff we saw in the first trailer.
Yeah, and there's also there's like a operating room. Looks like there's like dead people laying around, or people at least knocked unconscious. And there's like
dead people.
And there's like Borg parts as well. Like there's like half of Borg pieces and stuff like that laying around. So obviously there's some, you know, awful things going on with people being Borgs getting taken apart or assimilating people. It's hard to really tell what's actually happening. So from there, we obviously we're getting the whole, like I said, they're getting the whole crew together, and they show pictures of the crew. They show a quick picture of the ship. I can't really make it out too well.
Yeah, it's super unclear. It looks like Discovery Season 1 space scenes, or like it's all garbled. You can't really see what's going on.
Right. And we do get a picture of their ship attacking a Romulan warbird.
A TOS Romulan warbird.
No. Yeah, the original. So like, what the fuck is that still doing?
It's like, here, we'll show you something clearly that you've seen before, but all the new stuff, we're in a cloak and darkness.
Cloak and darkness, as you will.
Why is this like? Why the 200-year-old ships or the 100-something-year-old ships? Like
ship.
In generations, it's like the freaking 100-year-old bird of prey. This thing's got to be even older than a bird of prey.
Right, right.
The Romulan version of the bird. I guess they're both bird of preys, but you know what I mean.
Right. We get some more shots of fighting, and also the young girl that's enlists Picard's help. She seems like she has a love interest of some sort, so we see her kind of making out with some guy.
Mm, we see her burning, like she's covered in like air acid.
We do see that. Yes, there's something going on with that. We also see Q for a moment with his prosthetics taken off. So we got that going. Hugh.
Oh, I thought you said Q. I was like, Q? Remember Q.
No, Q. Just Hugh.
Yes.
And then we also have Seven of Nine, and she's saying that
she's double fisting phasers.
And she's helping out people who can't help themselves, and she, you know, she seems like she's some kind of a Avenger.
Yeah, I guess she's like left the Federation. I guess she got poked and prodded one too many times.
Ooh, you know that.
I mean, I'm guessing so.
And then we also get the great scene where Riker's washing the dishes. Nice to know that they still wash dishes in the 23rd
you put them on the replicator, and the replicator takes them back and does it for you. He's doing it the old way.
And
he's like, my dick will fall off. I gotta give it some time in between.
I gotta rest it. And we hear somebody yelling that Jean-Luc Picard's here, and he turns around, and obviously we get them reuniting, Picard and Riker and Troy. And then we also get a really
a
nice
farm with all their children.
20 of them.
Probably. He wasn't Captain of the Titan for very long. You know what I mean?
Oh, God. I have to take another maternity leave. And then obviously some more battle scenes that going on.
You see the bird of prey. I mean, the original Romulan ship again.
All right. And we get a little scene where Picard thanks Riker for not talking him out of all this. And he says, I know better not to. That's a really great scene. I'm sitting out on the lake. So, that's kind of that kind of wraps it up right there. It's it looks amazing. It really does. What did you think when you saw it?
It looks good. I like it much better than the Discovery trailer, which we will get into shortly. It looks good. It's starting to sort of answer some questions, but still leaving lots of things open. I feel like they keep shoehorning in these like little clips of, you know, old characters, but without really giving them any like reason to be there. It just sort of seems like, it's nice seeing Picard and Riker together again, but it just seems like
Sure. Everyone's
living the home life, and it's like, well, I'm going to go out on this adventure. I'm not going to talk you out of it, and I'll just stay here. Just have fun, Picard. It just doesn't
But you know, I mean, if they got kids, he's not going to be running out doing some crazy adventure.
It's true, but then they might be trying to do the endgame. They might be doing endgame again, and then Riker will go and figure out how to do time travel, and he'll die. And these kids, just like Tony Stark did.
And then he comes back later. Sorry.
But he'll come back as Brigham Young.
Oh, Jesus. Anyways. That's Picard. I loved it. I think it looks amazing. I am curious with this new crew if they have everything that is going to make for an interesting show. There's a lot of unknowns, especially with the actors and those characters. If we're going to get to know them, will we like them?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it definitely feels like it's going the Renegades route without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
More and more of these trailers seems to look more and more Renegades, and Seven of Nine looks like she's like full on, like, I don't know, like Sarah Connor.
she definitely does, killing everyone
and just like messing stuff up. I'm hoping she'll be a main character, not be a cameo, since she's in full ass kicking mode and he needs ass kickers on his team, since they're a bunch of Renegades, it looks like. So,
right.
I'm really hoping she'll be a main character, not just a cameo, because it looks like Riker and Troy are definitely more cameo type characters.
Yeah,
since they're just they're home bodies.
Yeah, they look like they're going to be like a one episode thing, or you know,
maybe they'll call Picard up and be like, "Hey, how's that mission going, Jean-Luc?
How's that mission going? I called in a favor from a friend."
Yeah, probably
Thomas Riker.
Oh yeah, Thomas Riker. We broke him. We did break him out eventually. Kira broke up with Odo to like get with Tom Riker.
That's hilarious. I loved it. I'm hoping it looks great. I hope it's as good as it looks. Let's go to our next trailer, Star Trek Discovery Season 3. We start off again with Michael Burnham. She is unearthing herself out of a bunch of dirt, which
she does in every season, you know.
Every season, it's kind of what she does. She's buried in dirt, and she has to pull herself out. We get a thing where she's been trapped in the future for like a year, and we see how many times things have changed for her. And then she seems to be teams up with the guy from the Calypso.
Yeah.
I forgot his name, if they even gave it.
I don't remember.
It's been a while since I've seen it. And then they show them being attacked by a bunch of Mandalorians.
Man-seeking wife, that's his name.
And then they show him being attacked by a group of Andorians, which
is
pretty cool.
He's like, "Have you heard about Taco Tuesday?
Taco Tuesday?
No. You eat pussy on Tuesday on Homemade."
Oh, jeez. That's a spicy taco.
The computer showed me how to do it on the holograph.
We have them trekking through some weird alien landscape where he turns around and says, "I see you believe in ghosts," and kind of pointing to the Starfleet Delta glyph on her chest, and meaning that this isn't that maybe the Federation doesn't exist anymore, or what it was.
Yes.
I think we've all kind of speculated that there won't be any kind of Federation, but we do get a flag of with some guy
it's like
saying
six stars on it, so the Federation is crumbled.
Yeah, there's like whoever's in the Federation.
If it exists at all. So yeah, Saru's exactly. Talking about some Federation person becoming captain this season. All freaking red herring, sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Right. Next we get a scene with what it looks like is some Trills in a cave, those caves where the
symbiotes.
They bond with the symbiotes. And it looks like Michael Byrne goes into it. So does she get a symbiote?
She gets a Trill. She gets to go. Maybe she becomes Dax.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of weird. So that's unusual. That was like unexpected to see that. We get a lot of like Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, because there's a Morn running around with a hand cannon.
There is.
I've exactly, never seen a Morn move so fast before.
That's the most uninebriated, sober.
Well, it's weird. He's still got the giant Morn head, but he's got a sleeker body because he's running.
Right.
He's like, if Morn was in CrossFit, this is this guy.
He was in CrossFit. Nice. Next, we get some more action sequences. We also get Captain Georgiou kicking ass in some kind of bar. So she's doing her thing as usual.
Yes.
It's just looks like a lot of action schlock, actually, for what I can tell. And it looks like, for some reason, they're putting everything on Michael Burnham to forge the Federation again?
Yep. It's the Michael Burnham Show, Season 3.
It's the Michael Burnham Show. This is the Michael Burnham Show. It looks good.
Fuck all the other characters.
We get Tilly, we get Saru, second of Stamets.
Second of Stamets, second of Culber.
Of Culber, yeah.
Not together. On screen anyway.
We do see a picture where they're reunited. Like, we see, like, Tilly hugging Michael, so.
Yeah, after a year.
Took us a year, but we found you.
We found you.
I don't know. It looks good. It looks interesting. I can't. It looks very actiony, so it's hard to really tell if there's anything else going on. There's not a lot for the story other than the Federation looks like it's not non-existent, if barely existent.
Yeah, so. I was worried about this Mad Max in space, and this is exactly what it looks like, Mad Max in space. I was calling this like we were talking about the last episode of season 2. I was like, ugh, I really hope season 3 isn't Mad Max in space.
Yeah, right. I don't know. It doesn't look terrible. There's not a lot to go on other than the Federation is not what it used to be, which is sad. I mean, but also, you know, things fall apart. You know, so I did wonder if something that it happens in the Picard show leads to what happens to Discovery season 3.
Well, I mean, like, even in Next Gen and DS9, all the admirals are shed and shady as fuck. So, these guys being bad and the leadership being so rotten, I mean, I guess it's inevitable that the Federation was going to fall apart, but I feel like it's the antithesis to Gene Roddenberry's vision that, like, yeah. They're making the Federation fall apart and making it a failure, ultimately.
Right.
I feel like that's not respectful of his vision or whatever. I mean, like, maybe it has some rocky patches, but it gets better. But it looks like it's dead and gone. And the couple of things Michael says at the beginning made me sort of think that maybe something she did in that year like messed up the Federation, and she's got to restore it because it's always got to be on her shoulders. So she starts the Klingon War, she finishes it. She directs the Federation, she's got to put it back together single-handedly.
You fucked up the Federation, Michael. Now you got to fix it.
I mean, the Federation might be destroyed already, but it's something she says. She says, like, I got to figure out what the dominoes are that led me to here this 1 year thing. Like, so it makes it sound like she did something to fuck something up. That's how I'm interpreting what that's saying is. Maybe she's not talking about that at all. Who knows? It's very vague and cryptic what she's saying. But because I've seen season one and two of this show and how everything focuses on Michael, Michael has a problem or creates a problem, and then Michael has to solve said problem. So
very formulaic in writing.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they're straying very much from the get-go, which is what I was really hoping season three would finally become an ensemble show, but I guess it's still the Michael Burnham show in season three. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm just kind of not super excited. I'm kind of bummed to see Mad Max in space. I was really hoping the Federation would still be there somehow. I mean, I was hoping, but I didn't really think it would be that way. I was pretty sure they were going to go the Mad Max route. You know?
We don't see other ships except Discovery. So,
I'm sure that's going to be like hush hush. But, you know, I mean, maybe they'll tie more into Deep Space Nine. They can show more Deep Space Nine aliens since they are, you know, 1,000 years in the future. It's just so weird that everyone's, like, angry at everyone now, like, except for Morin is fighting with the Andorians for whatever reason.
I saw Cardassian in there as well.
Oh, yeah, there was. So, that's cool.
Yeah, I saw Cardassian with the Morn when they're charging with those weapons. What are the Morn race called? I forgot.
I don't remember.
I don't remember off the top of my head either. But anyways, so they I don't know. It looks good. It's like no Federation. Is that really that interesting? And like, can we really believe that the crew of Discovery is going to reform the Federation? I don't. You know, like the Federation. You know, it's like when they assembled the angel suit, the red angel suit, they did it like in 5 minutes.
They're going to do it in 10 episodes, Aaron. I guarantee you.
Yeah, it's like we'll get the Vulcans on.
We're going to get the Tellarites on. We're going to make it better than it was before because the Cardassians are going to join.
Yeah, I don't know.
Did the Ferengi revert back to like all money? Because the Ferengi had joined the Federation at the end of DS9, so did they revert back to just being a capitalist society? Like, I mean, there's so much stuff they could do. Like, is the Dominion kind of back and fucking stuff up? Did Dominion come back and break the Federation? Because that's more palatable if the Dominion came back and fucked stuff up and cracked the Federation so that the Federation can't exist anymore. That would be more palatable than the Federation just dying on its own, because that seems antithetical to Gene Roddenberry's vision. As long as it's destroyed by an outside force, that seems better.
You know, I kind of agree with you, and I kind of like also can see it coming apart. Like, you know, like the Roman Empire came apart from within as well. You know, they had forces pushing on the outside of it, but it was the corruption and the people within that made the Roman Empire finally come apart. And they, he had Caesar, you know, who took, I mean, well, Julius Caesar to become the Caesar and the final Caesar to, you know.
Yeah, I guess, but the Roman Empire, like, conquered. The Federation just, like, bribes. Hey, we got this great... I don't know. I've seen that comparison before online, and I'm like, yeah, sure, but I mean, like, it's not the same type of empire. This is, like, it's supposed to be a voluntary, you scratch our back, we'll scratch your back, and kumbaya. Like, this isn't Roman Empire, where it's empire forged by the sword and by blood.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. It's totally different way of motivation. Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, I guess we'll just have to wait and watch it and see what happens.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, they've got freedom to do whatever they want. You know, they've claimed that they're faithful to Gene Roddenberry's vision, although without a Federation, that doesn't seem super likely. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Right, right.
Just like, I don't think he ever envisioned the Federation not being something in his future.
My other thing is, too, is, you know, 900 years in the future means, like, some radical new technologies. That's going to be really hard to envision 900 years of advancement.
Well, I think that's why they made it Mad Max in space, so they don't have to think very hard about advanced technology.
Yeah, I guess.
And maybe Discovery will be the most advanced piece of technology they have, because it's from a time where...
Everything fell to shit. Yeah.
I mean, you know, so Discovery has a fighting chance 900 years in the future, although, I don't know, there should be some other, like, you know, stuff that's only 200 years old that could blow Discovery out of the water, but who knows?
Yeah, right.
It just doesn't make a lot of sense, but who knows, maybe it'll be better than what we think, but I'm not super pumped for it.
We're cautious, as usual.
So excited for Picard. And, oh yeah, the short trek.
Oh yes.
Q&A.
Q&A, yes. That was just released. And it was interesting.
It was exactly what it said, Q&A.
So that is just basically...
Spock beams aboard the Enterprise as an ensign.
Ensign Spock beams aboard the Enterprise. I kind of thought... I could be wrong about this, but I kind of thought Spock was in on some different ships before he came onto Enterprise.
I don't know Spock's backstory, like Kirk's.
Yeah, I don't know exactly, but I remember reading in some of like Memory Beta and stuff like that, and maybe some Memory Alpha, what else he did.
Because I know Kirk was on the Farragut before he was on the Enterprise, but it seems like Spock was just always on the Enterprise. I could be wrong, but I don't remember reading anything else personally that he was stationed anywhere else. I could be wrong, though. I don't know.
But so he beams aboard, and he has a little smile on his face when he comes on there. So
he's the Joker.
The Joker. And so, and he meets, number one, which we find out her name is later as Una. Which is, I love that name, actually. I think that's a great name. I don't know why she just wants to be called number one all the time.
That's such a weird thing.
Yeah, it is.
But I mean,
weird.
Una is basically one. So, I mean, I guess it just,
I know, but I love it's just a cool name to give a character, Una.
It's pretty. It's prettier than number one.
Yes, it is. I agree. Totally. They don't say it right away, but she notices that he has a smile on his face when he beams aboard. And then from there, she says, I want you to be asking questions. And so he's asking her all these like really obscure, strange questions. And, from there, they get on to the, your favorite.
God, I fucking hate these turbo lifts so much.
Turbo lifts. There's like basically a
giant empty
ride.
Yeah. Roller coaster ride with these giant empty cavernous spaces that starships don't have.
I don't understand that. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
We've seen the inside of Cargo Bay, like in Enterprise. They're very tight shafts. There's not a lot of space in it. We've seen them in Next Gen. We've seen them in the TOS, Star Trek V. I mean, granted, they were labeled wrong in Star Trek V, but still. They're cylindrical holes. There's not a lot of free space. I mean, you got to have space for your components. I hate this so much.
Anyways, so they get into this thing, and then basically the turbo lift breaks down, and number one and Spock are stuck in the turbo lift, and we get a lot of
they
exchanges.
Have lots of hot sex in the end.
Yeah, yes, you wish.
Damn you, CBS All Access, and your censorship.
Yeah. So, but we get
number
like
one,
a,
it's time
like
for
a,
my Ponfar.
Yeah, I'm strangely going through Ponfar right now.
Right now. You have to have sex with me, otherwise I will die. Or I will kill you. So, which is better?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. So it was interesting just to see them go back and forth. Some of the questions I thought were kind of stupid, that they were...
The most interesting one is the one about the Federation. Or no, the Prime Directive. Don't you believe it's like utterly stupid?
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, wow.
I know, because they were like, you know, it better not to even ask about that, you know.
She's like, stop thinking about it. Don't ever think about that again.
I know. I don't know. From there, they try to figure out what's, you know, why the Turbolift has broken down, but
what all comes down that, to and doing so, while they figured out, we figured out the number one's atop.
Yes.
On your knees, Spock.
And what we do find out is that, you know, she's basically says, you know, like, I saw you smile. And says, if you're going to be, he says, if you ever want to be command, I'm assuming you want to be command. He goes, not really. He goes, and she's like, bullshit. Everyone comes here to be in command.
Well, everyone who went to this class that we both went through is command. Wants to be
so,
command.
Yeah. And he basically says, you better just keep all that freak stuff, you know, to the side. Don't even let it show.
Don't let your freak show.
And then she's, you know, then for some reason she decides to show him what she's her freak side is, and it's musicals? The yes. HMS Pinafore?
I'm the very model of a modern major general.
You know, it's funny for a second, but then I realize that she can't really sing that well.
And then she sings
okay.
Song.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's impressive. I couldn't sing that song for sure. You know, it's the, you know, like the all the different the words
rhymes
to it.
Yeah, it's an impressive piece.
But she doesn't really have like a great voice. She's okay, you know. So I'm like, that's your thing, and you can't sing that.
Mind.
I've heard better. I've heard that song delivered better.
Oh, sure.
So, but what? So, and then somebody comes and saves them at the last minute, and they give her like a handheld like rope to go up out of the turbo lift.
Yep.
Like that's not dangerous. What if she lets go?
Oh, it'll be fine. She'll be fine. They got super strength in the future. If they can't crack a walnut with their bare hands in the future, then they're not allowed on starships.
Yeah, that's right. Why did they just beam him out?
That's a very good question.
Yeah, so, I mean, and then we get a short, like,
Before it opens up, she makes him solemnly swear on his oath as a Starfleet officer never, ever to repeat anything that happened in the elevator.
Yeah, right. And, you know, okay, rightly so. She showed a side of her that, you know, is kind of weird. And, you know, so he goes onto the bridge, and then, you know, Pike kind of gets introduced to him for the first time. And, you know, he says, do you ever feel a sense of awe or something?
Yes, yeah. We do, but we keep it to ourselves.
And then he gives her a little, like, look, like, knowing look, like, I'm in awe of you, number one.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes.
And then that's kind of it. I liked seeing the Enterprise crew, the Pike crew again. I really love all those, everything there. It just, I'm, always conflicted with this Spock depiction. And I've said it more than once. I understand Vulcans have emotions, but their whole goal is to suppress the emotions. So I don't know.
I mean, yeah, we talked about this a little bit before the show started, but basically since Spock smiled in the cage, they're just like having like, when you touch the little blue thingies, they're just having like a field day, like having him smile all over the place and be all emotional until, I guess, TOS. Because he did smile once in TOS when he discovered Spock, I mean, Kirk was alive after he thought he killed him. So we've got two instances of Spock smiling in TOS, so they feel like they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, I know, and it's you know, Spock more than once mentions that he has emotions, and it's like and they are very strong, and we see them come out in different times too when he's affected by some kind of weird, you know, space effect, like the spores or whatever, like that, like in I forget what episode that was in TOS, but it's, you know, it's great that he has them, but it's like they keep wanting to say like it's always there, and it was like the great thing about Spock was always that he suppressed his emotion. He was completely devoid of emotion at almost all times. And I know this is young Spock, and I know it blows me away. It really does. I don't understand this writing.
Yeah, it's just like I said, it happened once, so they can do whatever they want. That's their excuse.
And I, you know, there's plenty of other people out there.
The rest of canon be damned.
Yeah, there's plenty of people out there that are, you know, are Discovery fans, and they defend Discovery for every little thing they do. And, you know, if that's your cup of tea, that's fine. But honestly, I mean, this is what I grew up on, you know, Spock and Kirk, and, you know, just watching those two together. And it's like, yeah, he showed emotion, but it wasn't like something he would do. Like, I don't know. It's very unnatural.
Yeah, it's not an all the time thing.
Yeah, I know it's their thing now. It's like this is where they're going. But man, if we're gonna get Ethan Peck, and I think he does great with Spock, he has a good vibe as Spock. But it's just stop writing him like that. It just really frustrates me. Like, yeah. What are we gonna get him crying next? Or, you know, like, and same thing with JJ, you know, Into Darkness, where he gets. You know, he gets furious because Kirk dies and he goes and attacks Khan. I mean, just so stupid. Like, I mean, honestly, people.
Maybe Spock will cry in the next Short Trek.
Maybe he will. That's the other thing. You want to talk about the next Short Trek with the Tribbles.
But, yeah, I do want to talk about the trailer for the next one, because the next one's got me – I think the next one's going to be the best Short Trek ever made, because it's got H. John Benjamin in it, the voice of Archer, and he's like – he sounds like a raving lunatic, and then there's, like, Tribbles all over the ship, and they're shooting the Tribbles with phasers. This is going to be amazing. And the
Tribbles are eating people, something we never even thought of before. Well, Starfleet personnel gets stuck. Yeah, but we see a picture of like some woman. She's stuck in like a small room with a ton of Tribbles, and she's screaming.
Well, maybe so she thinks they're going to eat her, but I don't know. Can Tribbles eat people? I don't know if they can. I wonder if he was just saying that whether to her to mess with her. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I don't know, but it does kind of make sense. And if you think about it, it could happen.
Maybe. I mean, it's just. It looks great. I mean, like, sure, there's canon weird things, because it seems like they never heard of Tribbles until when Spock Kirk and Spock encountered them, because there's, like, you know, no medical database. Bones is trying to figure out what they are and what they do. It's like, so there's going to be lots of canon problems, I'm sure, in the next episode, but it just looks like fun. And I'll have to turn my brain off to the canon a little bit just to try to enjoy the fun of shooting Tribbles and, like, Johnny running around like a madman. Because that just looks like a lot of fun. And I'm really sad that they're only going to have John H. Benjamin for a Short Trek. I really wish he was, like, a main character in one of these shows. And I feel like these Short Treks are going to tie in even less with the rest of Star Trek. I was surprised that last time Short Treks tied in as much as they did. But with Discovery being in the future, I don't see how these can tie in at all, unless they are going to do a Pike series eventually.
Yeah, it's weird that they're keep on referencing all these, you know, like that era, and they're not talking about what's happening with Discovery and crew.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it just seems kind of weird that these Short Treks are becoming more and more meaningless, theoretically, to the rest of it, but oh, just the Tribbles and Johnny's, but that's going to be so much fun.
Very nice.
I can't wait.
Looks great.
Just a couple. This episode will probably be out after that episode airs, so we'll be talking about that next week when we record.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a couple things too. Real quickly, if you want to find our show, you can go to Synthaholics.com. If you want to say more to us, you can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. Please check us out at YouTube, our YouTube channel, YouTube/Synthaholics. You can tweet at us at Synthaholics Duo. And go to our Facebook, facebook.com/groups/Synthaholics, and join the group. There, and you can talk to us there. And as always, if you feel like the show is something worthwhile, you want to hear, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/Synthaholics, and consider donating to the show. Dave, we should get into the meat of this show.
The Joker.
I think we'll do the first 10 minutes or so. Let's not get into spoilers. Okay. But then we'll go into full spoilers, and obviously we will let you know everything that we're going to say about this when we get into it. So just so everyone knows, The release date in the United States for the Joker was October 4th, 2019, and its budget was $64 million. And so far, as of yet, it has made $258 million at this moment, so worldwide.
Wow.
So
that's pretty good.
Okay. It's doing okay.
A lot of controversy. It had a pretty small budget.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, well, other than this is a period piece. We're going back a couple of years into the 80s for this. I don't think that gives anything away. So obviously dressing all the like the sets up and getting older vehicles and making everything like not look modern is a little bit of work.
Oh, yeah. Like getting all the old stuff, I'm sure, is
especially the city scenes
in the movie. Yeah, the city and then yeah. all the cars being from the 80s, too.
Yeah, clothes, cars, the whole thing. So we definitely have that feel. So so apparently this and just a real quick, it's directed by Todd Phillips, who is the director most famous for The Hangover.
The Hangover quadrilogy, right? Four of them?
There's three. There's not four, right?
I hope not. I only saw the first one, and I barely laughed at all. So
I saw the first one. I liked it. I don't know. I like the first one. After that, it gets a little, okay, whatever. So it was written by Todd Phillips, and it was also written by Scott Silver. Scott Silver did 8 Mile and The Fighter. So
the Eminem story.
He did the Eminem story.
This is how we got to candy coating around the chocolate center.
it's an origin story of the Joker, and it's a standalone story of the Joker. It's apparently none of this is going to go into any of the DC stories for the future. Whether they mine this and use this in further episodes, I don't know. But this is purely a standalone kind of art house film just for DC.
This is a Oscar slut movie. This is trying to get as many Oscars as it can.
Oscar slut.
It's an Oscar slut movie. I don't know. It's just trying to like just get Oscars because of its artsy tone and artsy script and artsy acting and composition. Like, there's not a whole lot of story. It's mostly just a performance piece by Joaquin Phoenix, which is brilliantly done, but it's just, to me, it kind of dragged.
I disagree with you with the story thing. I don't think the story is like anything super complex. I think there's definitely a story there. The problem with the story, in my mind, is that it draws from Martin Scorsese 2 films, his Taxi Driver with De Niro, and then his other De Niro, well, he did a ton of movies with De Niro, but his other film with De Niro called King of Comedy. They're total ripoffs of those stories. I mean, if you go see Taxi Driver and if you rent King of Comedy, you just take the main character and make the Joker the character. That's kind of it.
That might explain why I may not like it, because I don't think I've seen one Martin Scorsese movie that I've liked.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've seen The Departed, which I hated. I saw Gangs of New York, which I hated.
Wow.
And I don't know what other movies he's done that I can list off.
What is it with Martin Scorsese that you don't like? I'm very fascinated that there's not even Gangs of New York, I thought was brilliant. I thought it was a brilliant movie.
Well, Gangs of New York, my problem with that was like I knew the ending 5 minutes into the movie, so I was bored. It was like 3 hours, and it was like, okay.
But you know the endings of most movies anyways because you read the spoilers.
Yeah, but it's just like, I mean, like when...
There was no drama to it.
It was just like, it's just drawn out. It's like, yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio's going to kill you at the end because he's going to figure out that you killed his dad. Okay. And then Shutter Island, it's like I figured out that Leonardo DiCaprio was like one of the crazy people from the trailer. So I was like, I didn't want to go see it because I knew that was going to be the twist. He directed Shutter Island. I didn't even go see it.
Oh, Shutter Island is actually a really interesting movie, but
really?
It's I don't know. I guess you just have to. I don't know exactly what you go to see a movie for, but.
And then The Departed was an incoherent mess.
I totally disagree. I cannot disagree more how much that disagree with that statement.
I don't know. I haven't liked one of his. I have not seen Wolf of Wall Street yet. I kind of wanted to see that because Henry Zebrowski's in it, but.
Yeah, he's in it for like. I mean, he's in it, but he's not a lot. He's not in a ton. I don't know. It's just like, so I guess what you don't like is you don't like, those gritty street, stories that he's trying to tell.
Was there a story in Departed? I don't know.
Yeah. He's an undercover cop who's like, you know, in with the mob with Jack Nicholson. He's like running the mob and he's like running back before. And then there's crooked cops that are looking for who's. I don't know. It's a huge story.
I don't know. Maybe it's just lost on me. I don't know. I just didn't care. I haven't cared for any of his films.
Wow. I can't believe I'm having this conversation.
It's just funny because like there's all this stuff coming out about Martin Scorsese is like trashing Marvel stuff for being film park rides, and yet Red Letter Media has basically said this has been saying this for years that Marvel movies are just like theme park rides.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, Martin Scorsese is saying that. I'm just like, yeah, but I don't like any of your films, Martin Scorsese. So I don't really care what you have to say.
Well, I mean, yeah. It's obviously, everyone has their own opinion on what they like and not, yeah. But back to the Joker. It's a dark movie. It's R-rated. There's definitely violence, and there's definitely some very tense scenes. If you do plan on seeing this, just be prepared. It's not going to be a happy time.
Although for like violence, like I felt like this movie wasn't nearly as violent as it could have or should have been for a Joker origin movie. The violence really is not that bad. Like as far as like movies go, like, I mean, a couple parts are shocking, but it's not like it's not over the top like at all. Like not how I would expect a Joker movie to be. I was expecting a lot more violence.
Actually. It's not like Seven or something like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's more like this movie is more like Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, there's disturbing parts, and sometimes I go, whoa, that's pretty rough. But I mean, it's not like it's nothing you've never seen before. I mean, if you see any type of R-rated movies these days, it is a very dark movie. It deals with mental illness. It deals with society just being very callous. So there's a lot of like
deals
just,
with classism.
It's hard to watch in a lot of aspects because you know it makes you very uncomfortable in a lot of things. So
it's very disturbing. Like I said, I feel like this is the closest to being as disturbed as I have been. When have you seen Requiem for a Dream, Aaron?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this is on that level, I think. It's a movie
Requiem for a Dream, that's a disturbing movie, yeah.
It is super disturbing. I think Requiem for a Dream still wins at being most disturbing. And I never want to watch that movie or this movie ever again. Because I just, I don't care to. It's just like, I don't know, I don't need to be putting either of those in my head anymore.
See, Requiem for a Dream, I probably see again. It is a disturbing movie, especially certain parts. But I think it's still a well done movie.
I think it's a very well done movie. I think it's more well done than The Joker. All said and done, but they're both super disturbing, and like not something not my cup of tea. But they're definitely well done. They're artfully done, both movies. They're shot well. They're well acted. They're well executed. They're just very messed up. And I put them in the same kind of category. So if you've seen Requiem for a Dream, that's kind of the weirdness, disturbing. This is how it's going to make you feel very similarly, I think.
Yeah, right, exactly. And just as well as seeing Taxi Driver and King of Comedy, there's some rough spots in it, and it doesn't make you feel good. I mean, it makes you think, but that's about it. Well, let's get into full spoilers because here we are. there's not much more we can say about it without getting into revealing things about the movie itself.
Sure.
So if you haven't seen Joker and you want to keep this keep the surprises, definitely turn off your podcast now, and we'll wait. You can just unpause this when after you're done watching it.
Do 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 do.
All right. Well, we start off with the character Arthur Fleck, who is Joaquin Phoenix. He lives obviously in Gotham City. Gotham is just a complete cesspool. There's garbage everywhere.
The garbage strikes of the 80s are in full swing.
He's a like rent-a-clown kind of guy. So we see him getting we have him getting all his makeup put on.
He
as
works
a clown.
The United Way Clown Agency.
Yeah, it's an odd thing. And we see right away he's trying to put a smile on his face by sticking his fingers in his mouth, and even to the point of drawing tears, he's making himself smile so hard. You know, you're definitely realize right away that this guy is just there's
miserable.
Something wrong with him. Yeah, there's something wrong. And then we see him like he's on front of some store, like it's like a store's closing and everything must go
everything
sign. He's flipping around.
It's like the guy from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, and then some kids come and knock the sign out of his hand. They grab it, and he chases them down, and they take the sign and they club him with it, and then they just kick the shit out of him in an alleyway. And he's all beat up from after that, and he goes to
his psychiatrist.
The psychiatrist is the next thing he goes. We have a scene
in about 15 minutes.
And we find the psychiatrist is kind of like, whatever, this guy's just another fucking crazy person. And
yeah, she's super not into her job.
Yeah, she's definitely detached. Next we get where he goes back to work. One of the guys that he works with says, hey, I heard you have some problems. I'll give you a gun, you know, to protect you. Dave, has anybody given you a gun?
I've yet been given a gun. I'm 35 years old. I've never been given a gun by any person to protect me. Although, while evacuating from Hurricane Rita, my dad did hand me one of his guns.
That's
in
different.
Case someone's but no acquaintance.
I mean, this is Gotham City, so I guess we can let things fly. I mean, there's going to be
also the 80s. I guess I was never an adult working in the 80s, and no one ever did. Anyone hand you a gun in the 80s, Aaron?
No, nobody did.
Really?
But again, the city I lived didn't have a guy called the Riddler, the Penguin, or Two-Face. So, I mean,
or the Joker.
That Joker. Anyways, so he gives him a gun, and Arthur's like, oh, yeah, thanks, you know.
It was weird, because it sounded like he's like, oh, yeah, you're my little boy. It's like, did he, like, sexually abuse Arthur Fleck? It was a weird comment. He's like, yeah, I'm like, I take care of you, take care of me. Like, I was like, what?
It crossed my mind at one point, too.
Because of what happens to him later, I'm wondering if that's actually was the case. I mean, like,
there, I mean, a lot of weird things. I mean, we're going to find out more, too. So and we get introduced to Arthur's mother. He's going up to this elevator, and there's this single mom. Her name's Sophie, and she's going up the elevator with them, and the elevator kind of, like, sticks for a moment. Like, it's kind of like Q&A.
Oh, no, not Q&A.
Except you're in an elevator with the Joker. So... that can't be good. That would be actually funny. Spock and the Joker in the
Spock
same elevator.
The Joker. Our album art should be half Joker's face and half Spock's face.
That's great. So she says this is an awful building, and she kind of makes this like kind of a like shoot myself in the brain, shoot and kill myself, thing to as a joke. And somehow Arthur thinks this is like great. And next. He asked her a little later if he does stand up comedy and he should go and that they he could go if she would go see him.
Yeah,
so,
go see my stand up routine. It's great.
But we get introduced to Arthur's mother, Penny, and she's asking about somebody who is supposed to write write to her, and she keeps writing these letters, and it's to Thomas Wayne. We don't find that out, I think, right away, but we kind of we put that together that she used to work for Thomas Wayne, Bruce Wayne's father, and he's like, if he saw how we were living, he'd help us right away.
He'd help us. He's a good man.
And then we get the sequence where there's like a Tonight Show kind of character. So it's the Murray Franklin Show. It's played by Robert De Niro. And
which is really fun. I mean, he did a really good job playing the part, although he's not very funny, even though he's kind of playing a comedian.
I think he did really good.
He did really good. I think Robert De Niro, it's a very strong performance of Robert De Niro. I just don't think he's very funny.
He's not off the chain funny for sure.
He's no Stephen Colbert or Jay Leno.
No, but it's like the curtain behind him is definitely Johnny Carson. It's all callbacks to Johnny Carson show, like what it's like, you know, even that old show curtain that was behind him. And Johnny Carson, not that he wasn't funny, he just wasn't like side splitting funny all the time. I take that back. Sometimes he could be, but not at every moment when you used to watch Johnny Carson. So Arthur and his mom are sitting in her bed, and they're watching the Murray Show, or whatever you want to call it, the late night show with them.
About being on the show.
Dad, he's laughing, and then they're like, "Oh, this guy put the light on him," and he's like, "You know, I take care of my, tell us about yourself." Yeah. And there's this whole fantasy sequence that it goes into place, and you know, Murray brings him down and talks to him. I take care of my mom. I live with her. And he goes, that's wonderful. And we get this all of a sudden, like, Murray is this like surrogate father that he never had, like in his fantasies. So, and then he snaps out of it, and he's just watching the show like you know, anybody else. So obviously he's got some daddy issues. He's looking for his daddy.
Where's my daddy?
Where's my daddy?
Hey,
play
daddy.
Some baseball.
Who's this guy's daddy? Daddy?
He never showed up.
Oh.
Next we get this really just cringeworthy scene where Arthur is in a children's hospital with these kids with cancer, and he's dancing around and singing, and a gun comes out of his pocket while he's dancing.
This is pretty good.
It's funny, but it's also like, oh shit, dude, what were you even thinking?
It's one of the few moments in the movie that just kind of makes you laugh out loud.
It does.
Like, and the movie's really dark, but it does have these weird, you know, necessary bouts where the things are just kind of funny.
It is funny, but it's also like, what were you even thinking? Why would you even bring a gun? And then next we get Arthur is being fired for bringing the gun. He says it's
it
like
was a prop.
It was a,
it's
it was
part
a prop
of my act.
For, yeah, yeah. He's like, whatever. So, next we're on, he's on the subway.
This hot girl still, like puts her fingers to her head, and I figured if I had like a one that looked real, it'd be funnier.
That's right. He's on the subway, and he's still in his clown makeup, and some three drunk businessmen are kind of like fucking around with this girl, and they're making her feel uncomfortable, and she finally leaves. But we forgot to even bring this up, that Arthur has this laughing condition where every time he gets nervous or something's uncomfortable, he just starts just laughing.
He laughs. That's the reference to the card earlier. I mean, he's got a card he just hands people so they can. It's like, I have a condition. See more on the back. And it's like, whenever I feel uncomfortable or scared or anything, I laugh uncontrollably.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's.
Please return the card.
Which that lady he handed to never returned it. It's laminated and everything.
Do you know how much this costs?
So he's on the subway with these three drunk businessmen, and they we don't know it at the time, but they work for Wayne Enterprise.
And one of them looks like Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah, very much so, I guess. And so they're tormenting this woman, and she gets up and leave. But unfortunately, Arthur is laughing uncontrollably in his clown makeup, and that just gets the ire of these guys, and they get their attention, and then
I think his laughing actually scared away the girl more than the guys being assholes to her, which I think is why they got so angry at the Joker.
Well, they were throwing French fries at her, so I would imagine she just wanted to get the fuck out of there.
She did, but I think the laughing made it worse. Because I feel like they blamed him for her leaving more than their actions.
Dave, if you were on a subway all by yourself and some guys were throwing French fries at you, and then there's a clown down the subway car laughing uncontrollably,
I'd go sit next to the clown.
No, I would. I would leave.
I would leave. I would leave too. Check, please.
Yeah, I'm out. So they start kicking the shit out of him. Because they're just a bunch of assholes. But unfortunately, what they don't realize is that Arthur still has his gun.
He's packing.
And he starts shooting. And he kills two of them right away. One of them
is wounded.
Is shot, but he's still alive. And he starts running. And Arthur chases him down in one of the subway stations and takes him out. And
so I feel like the first couple of shots he does is totally self-defense. And he's totally justified in what he does. Hunting down the third guy... That's starting to cross into not so okay territory.
Well, shooting people is not good territory anyway.
Well, no, but he was defending himself.
Yes.
Granted, that's a very harsh way of defending himself, but...
And granted, he has an illegal gun on him, too.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yes.
That's not he does not have a pistol permit.
Doesn't have a concealed permit. Being a clown doesn't give you that right for some reason.
Sir, that's a crime.
It doesn't say bang. Oh, it does say bang. It just says it very loudly and without a flag.
Very loud. So he kills all three of these businessmen. And we get... So he runs, and he's still in his clown makeup, and he runs into some bathroom. And this is where Arthur goes... He locks himself in the bathroom and... He just starts going into this whole, like, dance sequence inside the bathroom. So we get this, like, all of a sudden, like, something has been shaken loose or released. The Joker persona is, like, kind of, like, taking hold. It doesn't seem like it at times. Just seems completely bizarre. But it's definitely it's amazing performance by Joaquin Phoenix, but it's really weird.
It's really weird, and it's kind of drawn out. And this is starting to get to the point where I think like the movie's boring because like it's been like almost an hour at this point, and just now three murders have happened.
I don't think it's been an hour, but it's probably been a good 40 minutes.
It's been close. This is a long movie. It's like over 2 hours, I think.
I believe so, yeah. And then we get later on, we find out that Thomas Wayne. Bruce Wayne's father is running for mayor, and he hears about these deaths, and he calls this guy because it's been reported that somebody was in a clown mask that shot these the businessmen, and he kind of condemns it, says that's awful, and he says they're not successful people, they're clowns. And all of a sudden that begins a whole protest of people wearing clown masks. Because there is a whole disparity of wealth inside Gotham going on. So they start emulating, you know.
Well, you got the clowns. One millionaire Thomas Wayne, and everyone else is in the poorhouse.
Well, and it's sort of like what we see with, what's it called? The V for Vendetta, people wearing the Guy Fawkes mask.
Oh, yeah.
So
remember like the 4th of November.
Yeah, so it's like the Occupy Wall Street kind of thing happening. Mm-hmm. Next, we find out that Arthur's social service program is being shut down because they don't have any money. And Arthur has no medication now for his insanity. And
he even asks, what about my medication? And she has no answer for him.
No answer. Just like, tough luck. See you later. We also get Arthur does his comedy show, and he... It just goes awful. He gets that uncontrollable laugh, and his jokes are just stupid.
They're so great.
They land so flat. And so his goal the whole time is he wants to be a stand-up comedian. He goes to comedy shows. He takes notes, and his notes are so stupid. Like, you know, people find sexual jokes funny.
Talk about this.
Yeah, and it's like, obviously he doesn't understand what makes people laugh, because I don't think he understands people.
Well, no, he doesn't, because whenever you see him at the comedy club, he's laughing randomly. He doesn't laugh when right. everyone else laughs. He laughs like in between.
Right, exactly.
He doesn't understand how it works.
He's like off beat, but literally off beat. Your timing's all wrong. Then we find out that his mom. Well, so the shooting happened, and apparently his mom, right after, is taken to the hospital. She has some issues, and well, he's in the hospital with his mom, and he sees the Murray Show. And he puts Arthur up on and makes fun of him for his stand-up. And this is devastating to Arthur at the time, because
he's making fun of him.
His father, technically, his father figure in his brains. So later on, we find out that he's his mom wrote a letter to Thomas Wayne, saying that that Arthur's his illegitimate son, and there's this whole like argument between them. This happens right before she goes to the hospital, and Arthur's now wants to find out who Thomas Wayne is, and try to connect with him. Say just wants to find his father, basically.
Yeah.
So. So, and from there we get the police detectives are now looking for Arthur because they heard about they're tracking down the clown killer of the three businessmen, and they found out that he had a gun in a hospital and he got fired. So they're like, "What? This guy could be the guy." And when he finds out that they track him down at the hospital, and they find out, "Yeah, my mom had a stroke because you scared her so bad." So, and so he's kind of pissed off at them for that. And they kind of back off for a minute. Like, they don't really push him too hard.
And he doesn't do his laugh thing, which I was really expecting him to do at this point. He's like totally normal in this one point where he should be like laughing it up, because it's pressure. That's a lot of pressure to be questioned.
It is pressure, but it's like, it also, it seems like the Joker persona is coming out more and more. So like that nervous Arthur side is like leaving him, you know? So because of the whole thing, we find out,
his girlfriend gives him coffee when he gets back in to see his mom.
Yeah. His girlfriend who's with him the whole time.
Yeah.
We find out that,
this elevator kid girl.
Yes. Yeah, so, he finds out that his mom has some records at Arkham State Hospital. So he goes to find his mom's case file. And when he goes there, he has to steal the file because he, you know, the clerical worker just kind of freaks him out.
The clerical worker starts to get nervous.
Yeah. Didn't he say he killed those people?
He tells him, "Yeah, I killed those people." That's great.
So he steals a file from him, and he finds out that he was adopted, and that her boyfriend abused
him and her.
Yeah, it's kind of, lines are blurred, but it sounds terrible. And we have a couple scenes where she's in the hospital and a detective's talking to her, but Arthur's in the room kind of watching it, you know.
Oh, and yeah, it's like a flashback to mm-hmm. she was at Arkham. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's disturbing, because he finds out that a lot of this stuff, like, he doesn't even know. He doesn't know if he should believe the file, or if Thomas Wayne altered things that she's, you know, because he's such a powerful man, to say, like, Arthur is my illegitimate son, I can't let anybody know, so I'm going to bury it and make her look like she's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's a part of it, too. So, like, we're not entirely certain.
It could be either way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it would make more sense if it was a construct by Thomas Wayne, because she has a mental illness, and mental illnesses usually are somewhat hereditary.
Mm-hmm. It'd be weird, too.
Because that'd be a wild shot in the dark for them both to have a mental illness and not be related.
It'd also be wild that Bruce Wayne is his half brother.
Yeah, that would also be really weird.
That's a whole thing, and this really throws him over the edge. Of course, he confronts Thomas Wayne. First, he goes to Thomas Wayne's estate and sees Bruce Wayne, and kind of like tries to entertain Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne's very young at the time; he's a child, and he's doing like magic tricks and stuff like that. Sticks his fingers in his mouth, of course.
Alfred comes out like, "Why are you letting adults stick fingers in your mouth, little Bruce Wayne? You don't let me put my dick in your mouth. Why did this man put his fingers in your mouth?"
Anyways, he gets shooed away. Oh, Pennyworth. He gets shooed away, and the detectives go looking for him too for that as well. But next he goes at a theater like re-showing of a Charlie Chaplin movie. Which is kind of odd. And he decides that he's going to he sneaks in, which there's a huge protest outside, but he somehow finds an open door. And he walks in and he finds Thomas Wayne and he confronts him in the bathroom. And
Hey, Dad.
And he's like, "What do you want, money?" He's like, "I don't want your money. I just want, you know, to get to know." Basically, he just wants to know his dad. And he's hoping, and this guy doesn't care. And he actually punches him in the face and stuff like that. So, so that does not go well whatsoever for him.
What? That wasn't going to go well?
Yeah.
that doesn't make any sense.
And from there, it looks like that it gets even worse. So Arthur goes to the hospital, and he decides to just kill his mom.
Just smothers her with a pillow.
Yeah.
People are so fragile when you can die by pillow.
Die by pillow. And then he goes into his girlfriend, the girl that lives down the hall, to her apartment, and she's surprised to see him because she doesn't know who he is. So the whole time they've been spending time together and showing, getting coffee and going on a little dates and stuff like that, it's all delusional. This is all in his head. There was never any relationship between the two. So,
it did the Fight Club thing of showing all the previous scenes but without her in them. And I definitely, that was kind of unnecessary because Fight Club did it better. And like by this point, we already realized that they're not, that, you know, she wasn't with them. So I don't feel like they needed to show that.
They didn't. It wasn't as prolonged as the Fight Club, but there were definitely a couple scenes where they show him like he was talking to her in the doorway, or he was there out on the street together, and he was all by himself. It was all in his head. So, next we get after this happens, he's kind of like really losing it, but then he gets invited onto the Murray Show, and they said, you know, it was really strange. You know,
when he tries to refrigerate himself, he gets invited to the Murray Show.
Right, yeah. He puts himself into the refrigerator.
Well, you gotta chill out the Joker.
Like you do. So he goes into the he gets invited back to the Murray Show after they played that clip of him completely crash and burning, you know, choking on the doing a stand up. Yeah, and so they want, it's like, you know, we've got a lot of good response for that. We'd like to have you on. He's like, oh, okay, I'll be on. And then he gets a visit from his coworkers, the guy who handed him the gun, and one of the short dwarfs that was on there that they worked with. And Arthur kills the guy who gives him the gun. There was a little altercation between the two. He blamed him, like I forgot what the guy did, but he kind of like, stabbed him in the back kind of thing.
Yeah, and, he's the one who kind of blew the whistle about him having a gun, I think, more than in addition to the children's hospital calling. Like, he didn't stand up for him or anything.
Right, so he stabs him with a pair of scissors and kills his friend, and his dwarf friend is... He's like, oh my god, I can't believe it. He's like, I'm not going to kill you. And then he tries to
leave. He's like, yeah, he's like, leave. You can go. And he's not tall enough to reach the slide lock.
And he's still, you're like thinking any minute he's going to stab the shit out of this little dwarf, and he just lets him go.
he kisses him on the head and then lets him go.
Yeah, he's like, thanks. He's like, okay. He just leaves.
He's like, you were always such a good guy.
It's so uncomfortable and it's so funny at the same time that it's so awful.
It was
and
another
funny.
One like, of those scenes where you just kind of just laugh because it's awful, but it's just like it's also just the comedic timing is so weird in this movie.
It's so weird.
Like it doesn't sound funny, but like a lot of people laughed at that point in time.
Yeah, so weird. And then from there, gets dressed up. He's going onto the Murray Show, and then the detectives chase him down, and he has a whole chase scene while he's going to the Murray Show. And they one of the detectives chase him onto the subway, and there's a bunch of other clown protesters because now they're all wearing clown masks, and they're all doing that because
there's like some march going on.
Well, they're doing it for like a protest against the rich and the upper class. And he hides in with them. But then as the police close in on him, there's a fight ensues. And one of the police fires his gun. And then the people all attack the police, the two detectives, and beat the shit out of him. So he gets onto the show, and he asked Murray first of all, he's in full jerk, full clown makeup. And so he's like, what's with the makeup? He says, you called me a clown or a joker. So I want to be, this is my new makeup. It's nothing political. And he says, I want you to introduce me as the Joker.
He's like, yeah, we can do that.
So they put him on there, and he goes on to gets introduced in the show, and now he's in full Joker persona. Like he's theatrical. He goes out there and he's making these offbeat jokes that don't land at all. And at some point, he gets frustrated with Murray, and he has a gun on him, and he shoots Murray right in the head, right on live TV. He gets arrested, and the whole city is going into riots. And at some point, while he's being taken down to the police station, an ambulance being driven by these protesters crash into the police car, and they pull out the Joker, or Arthur, and he becomes their like messiah,
their mascot.
Yeah, and then the odd footnote, we have Bruce Wayne with Thomas and Martha, and they're going to see the movie that really gets killed, and they go, there's the riots on the streets, so they go back into this alleyway where his mom and dad
get killed. Random guys just comes and kills them.
And then we get the last thing.
It would have been nicer if it was the Joker, so it could have at least tied in with the 89 Batman movie.
It doesn't really happen that way in the comics, though. The Joker never really killed his parents. That was a weird thing. I understand why they did it in the 80s movies, because it was kind of like ties it into, like, make it easier for the audience to understand make it, like, kind of come full circle for that movie, but
sure, but like at least make it like tie in somewhere, because this movie stands purely on its own, and from what it sounds like, it's not going to be followed up by anything.
No. And last we get, he's in Arkham Asylum, and he's laughing to himself, and then the psychiatrist says, what are you laughing at? He says, you wouldn't understand the joke.
And then we get murders her.
She dies because you see him walking down the hallway, and he's got a bloody foot. And then one of the like orderlies are chasing him down the hallway, and that's kind of, the movie just ends right with that.
Yep, the end with the cutesy cursive 80s style the end logo.
Yep,
very strange designed movie.
Yeah, what did you think of this movie?
I think my first words to you out of the movie theater was, I guess it was a movie. Yeah. It was, I don't know, it was weird. I mean, it was definitely dark. I definitely stand by my Requiem for a Dream comparison for, like, creeped out, weird feeling, uncomfortable feeling. How the movie makes you feel. So if you're down for that, go check this movie out. I don't know. I feel like the movie was a little bit drawn out. I feel like it could have been like 30 minutes shorter and like it would have gotten across the same thing. The same message. It felt long and drawn out. Like it was beautifully acted. The shots were beautiful. Cinematography was really fantastic. I mean, this was technically a great movie. This was, like I said, it's being hoarded out for the Oscars. It was made for the purpose of winning Oscars, I think, more so than anything else.
Right.
Because technically it's well done, but I mean, it's short on plot. I mean, like, I'm not saying there's no plot at all. I mean, we just outlined the plot. I mean, there's plot. I'm not saying the story is bad. I'm just saying it's very limited. And it's a 2-hour movie, and it's a long movie for how little there is to it. You know what I mean? And that's kind of my complaint. And because I mean, a lot of times the movie just cuts to the Joaquin Phoenix just dancing or leaning over a couch, showing you all his ribs, or him just laughing. Just lots of weird things. And I guess all these things come together to help make the movie more uncomfortable. But they made him lose like a whole bunch of extra weight, so he would be emaciated and disturbing looking.
Joaquin Phoenix was, I'm not going to say, he was definitely a little on the chunky side the last time I seen him. Not like overweight, but he definitely was a little chunky last time I saw him. So I don't know what he did, but if he just like locked himself in a metal box in the middle of summer.
He got in Cisco's hot box.
Yeah, you know, from Paradise. Yeah. I don't know. It's
but it's
amazing transformation that he did.
He did, but it's also a super unhealthy one because he's like underweight in this movie.
Well, strangely enough, that you bring that up, because I always think about Matthew McConaughey after he did Dallas Buyers Club, where he lost all that weight to play that I think he was the AIDS victim. He lost so much weight. Matthew McConaughey used to be like, you know, super buff. Really, like, kind of a heartthrob kind of guy.
Yeah, I've seen him in some romantic comedies. Yeah.
Now he's back to, like, a normal weight, but he still, like, does not look normal. He does not look normal anymore. There's something in his face that looks gaunt. Like, he went through, like, a war or something like that.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, like, when you do that to yourself and you, like, sort of become disordered and eating, like, you, like, you're not the same. You've kind of like wrecked your body a little bit. And I think Kaylee said Joaquin Phoenix was on TV and he was saying, like, you know, I'm like, he's like kind of damaged after losing all that weight.
Yeah, I would believe it. I mean, of course, they get paid $1 zillion. So, I mean, that does help.
But still, like, none of the other Jokers had like this crazy disordered eating. I mean, Jack Nicholson was just Jack Nicholson at the time, he didn't do anything special.
No, I mean, for sure. Jack Nicholson doesn't do anything special for anything.
I mean, like all the other Jokers, I mean, none of them were super emaciated looking. I mean, Heath Ledger's Joker is still probably my favorite Joker. And he was dark and menacing and also wasn't crazy emaciated looking. So I don't know. I don't know. I feel like it wasn't for the part of the Joker. I feel like it was for this movie. They just wanted a weird, emaciated looking person to make really disturbing images on the screen.
It definitely does, and it adds something to it, I would have to say. It definitely makes something, and I don't know.
It's not inherent to the character of the Joker. It's inherent to this Oscar thing that they're trying to do.
Right. Well, I mean, in like also, what's his name, who played Batman in the Nolan movies?
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale lost all that weight for when he played in The Machinist.
Yeah.
I was like insane how skinny he got. So
and then he put on a whole bunch of weight to become Batman. And then he's like, we want you to play Batman, not Fat Man. So he had to lose a bunch of weight again. So he bounced back and forth a bunch to be Batman.
Yeah. I don't know. It's definitely something some of these actors do for sure. I don't know. I think that's part of the effect of the character. I don't think that's probably a great thing to do to yourself, but
I feel like they could have done prosthetics or like, you know, like a puppet or something. Cause I mean, like the scene where he's bent over his shoe and you can see all his spine. I mean, that could have been like a puppet or something. I don't know. They didn't have to like do that to make a person lose all that weight. You know what I mean?
Right. Or get a stand in.
Yeah. Or just find someone who's actually that, you know, like a body double, like something. I mean, you don't have to, I mean, you didn't see his face for that sequence until the camera angle changed. I mean, like
right.
it didn't need, I don't know. I'm sure some people were just small that that small anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. It seemed unnecessary to put him through that kind of physical hell, and then to play the Joker, which is a kind of mental hell. Because I mean, actors, like, when you have to do the same part over and over again, you get into that mentality.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, that's not you kind of like absorb what you do. I mean, that's the problem with Heath Ledger and him playing the Joker. Like, he couldn't kind of handle it, and he kind of OD'd because he was trying to deal with that headspace.
It's possible. I heard that his people gave him the wrong medications and he mixed them.
Well, he also like was like getting a whole bunch of different places from different people under different names, or just
I'm sure he was. Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, like, you know, he kind of did it to himself too. From it sounds like, but it sounds like playing the Joker was like hard on his psyche.
I'm sure it was, and I'm sure like anybody takes on a dark role like that, and especially if you really delve into it, you totally change. I always think of I can't think of his name right now. Jesus. I'm coming up Jeremy Irons, but that's definitely not it. I'll have to look him up. But anyways, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that that make that whole transformation into a character, and they're totally, you know, transformed after doing the whole thing. You know what I mean? Like they make a totally different, like they inhabit that person.
Well, yeah, and Jared Leto also goes full method, and so like he was like sending people like dead rats or something when he was trying to play the Joker in Suicide Squad. He was like doing a bunch of dumb stuff, like offset, yeah, just to be the character. Like, it's kind of dumb.
Daniel Day-Lewis, that's what I'm thinking.
Oh yeah,
of.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. He does that a lot. When he did, I don't know if you saw Lincoln. It is just masterful. His character of Lincoln is just beautiful. I could not believe how well he acted that character. I mean, I've seen him do other characters, and they're just as great, but I don't know. It's beautiful.
What would you think overall?
I think this movie's – so this movie gets a lot of grief because I think – a lot of people, it was about the incel thing, right?
Yeah, I didn't get it. This movie had no incel message. He thought he had a girlfriend, and he didn't, but it wasn't he was being involuntary cell, but he was just fucking crazy.
He was out of his mind. Then this movie's gotten a lot of grief that, like, you know, like kind of like class warfare and a bunch of other stuff that's going on in it. It's like, it's a fucking Joker movie. What did you fucking expect? I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's like it's a dark fucking twisted character, and always has been. And there's been different iterations of the Joker all throughout comic book history. There's the obviously the psycho killer, which we're seeing, which we sort of see with the Heath Ledger character. Mm-hmm. We see the topsy-turvy kind of character with Jack Nicholson. But there's also like a version of him that's sort of like a criminal genius, a mastermind, and he's like actually like a chemist, and that's where he comes with the Joker smile, or he sprays these people with this gas, and they get like that grin like the Joker gets.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's like different variations, and like DC, and it's all comic books, not just DC, but there's different variations of the character, and the character of the Joker has never had an official background. Like this is what happened. There's been other things they've alluded to it different times. The Killing Joke is one of the bigger ones. The Killing Joke actually, it loosely touches the Killing Joke in this movie, but it doesn't totally pull from it.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, you know, him trying to be a stand up and stuff like that. It's one of those things. It also pulls from real briefly Dark Knight Returns when he's on the show, the Murray Phillips, Murray Franklin show. Where there's the Dr. Ruth character, mm-hmm. the sex therapist, and he does the exact same thing. The Joker kisses her, and she goes insane because he's got that stuff on his lips to make her nuts.
Yes.
So, anyways, I enjoyed this movie for what it was. I knew what I was getting. I was getting a Joker movie, and I know that most people don't think of the Joker as a criminal mastermind. They look at him as sort of an insane psycho killer.
I was really wanting the criminal mastermind angle because I feel like I wanted to see someone who would stand up to Batman, and we really didn't get that in this movie.
Nah.
Joker had almost no agency in this movie at all. He didn't really do anything to the last act of the movie.
Right.
For the first two-thirds of the movie, everything is happening to him, and he's got little to no say over it.
Right.
And so it's just, I don't know, he just doesn't seem like a particularly strong character or strong villain at all. I mean, sure, the Joker persona starts coming out at the very end, but he's still, like, crazy as fuck. He still doesn't have, like, the mental capacity to take on Batman. So I just kind of, like, I don't know, I just am a little bit disappointed that they didn't play up he's crazy, but he's also got a great intellect. They didn't do that at all. He's just crazy.
Yeah, he seems just like just a person that's completely unhinged, and society and everything around him just keeps falling apart, making it worse and worse. You know, he gets beat up a lot. He loses his job, loses his counseling and meds,
loses the girlfriend he never had.
He can't get a girlfriend. His mom finds out all this hidden abuse with him, which somehow he suppressed that as well. So, I mean, there's all this bad stuff that's happened to him, and he's totally coming unraveled. So here's the other side of it, is more of, I see the Joker as a story of today, what we see with a lot of, like, mass shooters and people who have completely lost their minds over certain things. I think we're seeing this over and over again. People are just fighting mental illness and crippling loneliness in their lives. People are just so lonely. They have nobody to turn to. I mean, at least he had his mom, but it sounded like his mom was a part of the problem as well. And like we said, there was small things being alluded that maybe there was a sexual relationship between him and his mom.
Maybe.
It wasn't like over the top. Like, they didn't spell out.
He was also bathing her completely.
Bathing her, and then after she was in the hospital, and I don't know if he just killed her or just before he killed her, he was like in his bed, in their bed, and he was kind of like laying there looking at where she normally would lay. You know, there was a part where they danced together.
So, like, maybe they had something weird going on, and then also...
I'm not saying that's what happened, and it's not spelled out like that.
No, it's not. Just like his coworker who he murdered, like, mm-hmm. I felt like maybe there was some kind of some sexual abuse happening there, because he was too, like, crazy and mm-hmm. slightly retarded mm-hmm. to say no or whatever. I mean, 'cause he didn't seem like a fully developed human. He just seemed, like, crazy. Right. So he had, like, almost childlike in his craziness. So he could have just been, like, tricked into doing weird sexual things with a weird big clown guy. I don't know. It didn't seem spelled out, but it would be motive to murder, I think. Kind of being abused for a long time like that, in that way.
It's possible. So I see that as a... I see this movie more as, like, a societal...
A class warfare movie slash the lack of care of mental health.
Mental health, you know, obviously we have mass shootings. Class warfare. We see a lot of people who are just trying to make a living and they can't even make a decent living. And you have these people who are, you know, uber rich and they just couldn't give a fuck.
I watched the Red Letter Media's Half in the Bag video for this, and they said something that made a whole lot of sense. It's like, when they described this movie, they said it's like this movie was a complete script, and it had nothing to do with the Joker, and then they just like kind of like decided, hey, let's take a DC twist of this and make it about the Joker instead of what originally was about. Because it seems like it almost could be a different movie. Like, it didn't have to be about the Joker, you know, it could have just been anything.
It could have been, and honestly, you could have taken this any way you wanted to.
I mean, like, it could have been the exact same movie and not set in the DC universe, and could have been called Clown Man instead of the Joker. You know, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it could have been anything. Like, it didn't have to be the Joker. It didn't have to be the Wayne. This movie could have been its own thing, and it almost seems like it could have been. And I think they might be on the money. I don't know.
A lot of times scripts. Scripts bounce around quite a long time, even for years. before. I was I heard another podcast, and they were talking about one of my favorite sci-fi movies, Interstellar, and how somebody wrote a treatment for that, and it was years and years before Christopher Nolan took that on, and he rewrote a lot of it too, just because to make it more of to his vision. So it happens a lot. So
Michael Caine's vision too.
Michael Caine. Yeah, it could have been anybody, anything like that. So it's very possible you're right about that, or they're right.
They could be right. So
I see this as like a not just a Joker movie. It's a society looking at ourselves. And yes, is it a little bit cartoonish in its way? Yes, a little bit. It's like way over the top. But it, at the same time, you know, like you think about all these, like, you know, mass shooters, they want to become famous. And what does Joker want to do? He wants to be on the Murray Franklin show. He wants to be famous. He wants to be a stand up. He wants to be well known. He wants to make people laugh. And instead of doing that, he ends up becoming this messianic mass killer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's disturbing because that's what they're depicting. And I think that's what happens. Not just, you know, I think it happens all over the place now. And I think we're all, even if you don't want to go out and shoot people or kill people, everybody's trying to go for like fame. They're trying to get rich or trying to make a living. And they want to have that lifestyle that's shown in all these reality TV shows and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it seems like it's this whole thing that's a commentary on our society, which I sincerely believe that there is a huge issue that we're not, you know, happy with the things that we have and the friends we have and the life that we have. You know, we're always looking for something else. And I don't know. It's odd.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely kind of commentary on how things are now. Like, I agree with that. Like, because, I mean, dealing with a lot of the mass shootings and stuff like that lately, it's just like people want their 15 minutes of fame. They want to be blown up on social media and the news and whatnot. And I think that leads into a lot of bad things. And the sensationalism of it kind of perpetuates it, unfortunately. So it's like we're in this vicious cycle. If maybe the news didn't talk about it so much, maybe people wouldn't try to be so stupid.
Right, and then there's copycat people who do it right afterwards. So if there's a mass shooting, then usually in a day or two later, you'll see another mass shooting, you know, because there's somebody else out there that says, "Oh, I could do that too and become famous."
And there was tons of stuff on the news sites that many people the incels were going to come shoot up the Joker, which is why we made the joke last week that if we don't get killed by incels, we'll be back this week to talk about the Joker. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe they're laying low, waiting for the stuff to happen, or maybe
the Oscars.
Yeah, maybe they're waiting for the Oscars to happen. They're shooting up the Oscars instead of shooting up the movie theaters. I don't know, but right. It was something in me just is like, well, maybe since so many people are reporting on it, maybe it'll happen in more than just one city. Because I don't know, maybe it'll bolster them because like it's being on the news so much and nothing's even happened yet. So how much will it be on the news once it finally does happen? So it's kind of strange that I mean, I'm glad there hasn't been one, to my knowledge. I mean, by the time this comes out, maybe there will be one. I hope not, but I'm just saying.
I don't think it. I mean, it's possible, but now we don't have. I mean, when we heard about the Aurora killing for the Batman, The Dark Knight Rising, or not Dark, it's The Dark Knight, I think it was. He didn't pick it because Batman. He had dyed hair and stuff like that, but he just like he just used that because there was just a lot of people in the movie theater. Just unfortunate, you know, just a terrible, unfortunate situation, of course. I also want to talk about Dave. This is something that's been disturbed me, and this is going all the way back to Phantom Menace. We take a character and that's obviously the villain and we make them the hero. You know, we took Anakin Skywalker, and back then we have three movies showing the arc of him becoming evil. And then it's marketed towards children as, like, you know, Anakin's awesome. And then all of a sudden Anakin's a huge monster, right?
I'm going to kill the younglings.
And he, you know, chokes out his, you know, his wife. She dies right after. And same thing. I mean, not that this is – obviously the Joker's not marketed towards children, but we're taking a character that's
– the DC movie. DC movies are always marketed to kids, don't you know?
Don't you know? But it's a character that's getting a standalone. I mean, obviously the Joker's popular, but you know, you get a standalone movie, and people are going to idolize this character, and they already do. I mean, Heath Ledger pushed it over the top. How many Comic Cons do we see? Like, oh, there's another Joker cosplay. Bravo.
Harley Quinn cosplay.
Yeah,
Joker and Harley Quinn are some of the, I mean, at least in Buffalo, those are some of the most common you see.
It's honestly, I get if you like Joker, but it's like, can you pick somebody else? It's the fucking easiest thing out there. You throw makeup on and wear a suit. I think some of them like to do it because they like to be dicks. The other thing is I don't understand the draw to it so much because you want to be a raging asshole. I don't know. I have huge issues with this. I like the Joker character. I like Heath Ledger's version of the Joker character. I like Joaquin's Phoenix's version of this character too. It's just that we're taking it and we're totally focusing on this character. There's no Batman in this movie. I mean, there's Bruce Wayne, but he's very young, obviously.
He's like six.
Yeah, it's we are glorifying the villains. And this is not an anti-hero movie. This is a person becoming completely unraveled and killing people in their insanity. Did this ever think a thought across your minds? This always haunted me during the first three movies of like Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones and stuff like that with Anakin. Did you ever cross your mind before? Or
I know you mentioned it before back when we did our talks about the prequel trilogy with the Geekiverse guys.
Yeah, yeah.
On my own, not really. It didn't really. I don't know. Like, it didn't really. I mean, I don't know. Like, in the first movie, Anakin's not even the main character. I mean, he's supposed to be, but I mean, it's sort of like.
He's in there. You get the introduction. Yeah. And obviously, like,
there is no protagonist in the first movie. Although, I guess theoretically, I think George Lucas said that Padme's the protagonist of the first movie. Which is weird, considering she's got, like, no agency the entire film.
Well, she's as flat as she can. Her costume design is wonderful, but she's like, Chancellor, what do you think?
Well, also, she's not even like, she's like the servant most of the movie. So she's not even like, she's the queen, but she's like playing the servant because like they're all decoys of each other. And the real queen is never the real queen in any of the important times. So she's always like this person who's got no say in anything. She just kind of strung along for the entire journey of the first movie, and so is Anakin. So like both of the characters who you think would be the main character for the Phantom Menace have no agency. They're just drawn along by the Jedi.
Right, but I mean, other than that, I mean, just let's get back to the idea of like we're taking the villain in the rest of the movies, and yes. Darth Vader, Anakin.
He turned good at the last second, so he's not really a bad guy.
But I mean, it's still like it's so bizarre to me, and I don't understand it. It's like we're glorifying the evil.
Yeah, it's weird. I wouldn't mind some things being dark and seeing some things from a different point of view. Cause I mean, I enjoyed TIE Fighter a lot because you got to play from a different point of view. And it's sometimes fun to see a movie from a different point of view, but maybe not this one. Maybe not the Joker. Maybe more Star Wars movies from the bad guy's point of view could be interesting. But, the Joker, I don't know. Like it's a little bit too close to home. I mean, granted he's a comic book character, but like it's set in the real world. Like seeing bad guy's point of view and something like Star Wars isn't that big a deal to me because it's all science fantasy. So, I don't know. It's all suspend your disbelief and some imagination. But the Joker, there's, you know, people, it's in a relatable city, and, you know, gun violence and the type of movie it is, mob, you know, mob mentality and all that stuff like that. That's a lot more closer to home than Star Wars stuff is. So Star Wars stuff doesn't really affect me or bother me.
But just to back up on that for a second, just, you know, like, you know, Revenge of the Sith, we have Anakin, he kills Count Dooku, beheads him. You know, obviously, like you said, killed the younglings, you know, chokes out Padme and eventually kills her, you know, I don't know. You know, and the young kids are going to see these movies with their parents. And, you know, for all this time, everyone's like, oh, Anakin, he's the best. And I was like, oh, he's a monster. And then we have a whole generation of kids that grew up with those movies. And he's the fucking monster.
Yeah.
It's like, what does that do to the psychology of a generation?
I don't know.
This is something that disturbs the fuck out of me, honestly. And it's like,
maybe that's why people can't, yeah, maybe, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that's why people are having such a hard time nowadays. Cause I mean, I don't know. I was basically in college when those movies were coming out. So it didn't really faze me in that way.
Right. Yeah. Me too.
And you were older. You were probably,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You were well out of college by that point.
It just was, but it's, to me, it was like one of those things that were just like, I honestly, it was really just like, it was fun because it was like, you know, we're seeing Star Wars and we didn't know we get like a glut of Star Wars after that.
Yeah, we didn't know. Yeah.
I just remember even seeing Revenge of the Sith and I was like, well, this is going to be probably the last Star Wars ever made. You know, this is probably it, you know? But I mean, still, you know, it does make me scratch my head. And like the Joker is, you know, we're going to get certain people go. I mean, yes, we went to go see the Joker because it was a new movie and was something we wanted to break up the Picard look backs that we've been doing. But there's a whole swath of population there seeing the Joker because they identify with something with it.
Yeah, that's not going to be okay.
No, and that's what's worrisome to me, and it makes me think a lot about this, and I don't know what that means. That maybe this is somewhat good because sometimes when films are, you know, films, TV, even like, you know, music and stuff like that brings things to the attention to the population that mental illness is a serious thing, and if we don't fund it, if we don't help these people, it's just going to get worse. Maybe stuff like this will, you know, move things in the right direction, but still there's going to be people going there not to be, social workers and psychologists and psychiatrists. They're going because they identify with that character.
Yeah. That's the scary thing. And there are more people that probably identify more and more with that in our society, which is like super not great.
No, it's not great.
Especially with all the crazy people who are, you know, who are already like kind of shooting places up and
yeah,
not right.
I don't know. It's worrisome. It's probably the worst drawback to me about this movie.
Yeah,
because
there's no hero. There's no good person in the movie. Everyone is a bad guy in this movie.
Yeah,
especially the Joker.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, you can say the Joker is like, well, he's just reacting for all the bad shit, and he just gets worse and worse. Yeah, but it's the choices we're all given shit in our life.
No, the only good guy is the midget.
Yeah, yeah, I think they're called.
Who was probably terrible? Who was probably a terrible person? We just don't know anything about him.
No, it's possible.
But,
who knows?
But I mean, like,
he's molesting his daughter or something like that. No, but it's like, you know, it's like we're all given, like, at some points in our life, like the shit end of the stick.
Yeah.
And we have to learn how to live with it or navigate around it and not go and kill people or hurt people or any of that stuff. We have to learn to deal with it and,
you know, be good, decent people.
It's difficult sometimes too, because sometimes you feel something happens, somebody says something or does something to you, and you just want to freaking, you know, kick them in the face, you know,
throat punch them.
But, you know, yeah, but sometimes you can't, I mean, those things, that's not how things work in real life. So,
It's just a shame that some people might get encouragement out of this movie, and I don't ever want to go into the stage where it says, like, I don't ever want to say an animate object made someone do it. I don't want to say this movie made people kill people, but just because the movie might encourage people, just because there's no, like, it has nothing bad to say about anything. It just is like, well, this happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't come down. The movie doesn't really have, like, a soul as far as, like, this is bad or this is not bad. It just, like, this is how it is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like there's no moral to it. There's no question. Like, you know, like usually some movies have like a moral to them, or like they have, you know, they're trying to get across a thing. That's kind of the thing that irked me about Prometheus. Is like they were trying to like it was trying to have a point, but then the point was, I don't know, make your own point up. I'm like, no. I know what I believe. You tell me what you believe. And this movie doesn't believe anything, because like the Joker's like, I don't have any agenda. So no. The movie is as soulless as the character is.
As the character, right. You're right. I mean, but that's the thing is, like, and one of the things, one of the complaints with the first Superman movie, Man of Steel, was, you know, they got the character wrong. I think a lot of people are angry that he killed Zod in the end. It's like, that's not what Superman would do. You know, like, Superman doesn't kill. He finds another way to rectify the situation. And, you know, you see a movie like that. If you watch like the first Christopher Reeve, you know, motion picture of Superman, yes, it's dated, but you're taken over to that. Like, this is a hero we're watching. This isn't like, you know, same thing with the Nolan Batmans or whatever, you know, like you're seeing a different version. You're inspired by that character in some shape or form.
Yeah.
This has nothing. It's hollow. It's like this character is just, is a dark pit, and there's nothing below it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And nobody's there to help him build anything in that pit, or to build a bridge or cover it or whatever. It just never ends, and it just gets. And I'm assuming from there, Joker gets worse and worse. So
probably,
I think the real thing, if this resonates, if we see people in comic conventions dressed as Joaquin Phoenix's Joker.
It will happen without a doubt.
Yeah, it's
they're already popping up on Facebook.
I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, I get it. Like, it's a popular character too. And let's face it, it's probably a pretty easy, other than getting his burgundy suit that he has on.
Yeah, probably.
So, I don't know.
It's also going to be very easy. I mean, you just pretty much need to. I mean, I guess you can make it yourself, but I mean, you have to buy like a look for an old suit, and then you're pretty much set.
Right, and you know, you're right. You can't blame a movie just on everything.
Yeah, I
wouldn't do that ever. I think this might push people further. You can't blame in a direction. Movie.
You can't blame video games. You can't blame rock music. And roll music. You can't blame rap music. You can't blame, you know, forks for making you fat. You can't blame pens for making you spell bad.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't blame guns for killing people. The problem is people. People do bad things, and it has nothing to do with the inanimate object.
Right.
People have been killing people since the dawn of time. Before video games, before movies, before rap music.
And I agree with that completely, but will this kind of push people in a certain direction? And you can't say this is the reason they did it, but it's like, I'm hoping this doesn't, that's not the case. Like, this gives people more fuel, you know? Who knows?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I don't think a movie made anyone, I don't think this movie makes people, but I think it doesn't say don't do this. The movie doesn't come across that way.
And nobody's stopping him either, other than the police trying to chase him for a little bit and being unsuccessful.
And they kind of give up. Yeah, I mean, there's no... Yeah, it's just... There's no moral lesson in this movie. And so people might just take that as like, oh, well, this is okay.
Right.
I'm not saying the movie's going to make them do it, but just maybe people will think the movie gives them permission to, I don't know. It's just because there's no repercussions in this movie.
Well, the character, like we said, is completely just hollowed out. There's nothing there, and obviously has mental issues. There's no leadership in Gotham. I mean, Thomas Wayne says he can fix things, but obviously people are completely he's out of touch with people.
Yeah.
At least in the movie, it's what it depicts, that there's a whole swath of the population that don't see things his way. Social services that you would, that someone like you know, the Joker would need to get his medications and get help is not there. There's no money for it. So I mean, society's failing, leadership is failing, and then just the character itself is completely failed. So I mean, there's nothing good in this story whatsoever to make you go like, yeah, something could work out, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. It's kind of depressing in that way. Depressing that there's no good really to come out of this movie, and it's just dark and makes you feel kind of like crap when you watch the movie and uncomfortable. It's I mean, I'm not saying don't see it. I don't think I'd say that. I wouldn't say don't see Requiem for a Dream. Like, watch it once and then, like, enjoy that scar you got. Because, I mean, they're artfully done. I mean, for the art of it, they should be seen.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, some movies are harder than others to see, obviously.
For sure.
And there's some movies, there's certain scenes I decided not to. There's been two movies I've actually walked out of because I just didn't want to see that. Scenes. It was a 90s movie. Actually, I think it was Liam Neeson was in it. Was it both movies? Holy shit.
Oh, really?
I could be wrong. I can't remember. But Strange Days, it was like a sci-fi movie where people could jack into like people's brains. Anyways, there's like this brutal rape scene. And I just left. This is back in the early 90s. I just like, I don't want to fucking see a brutal rape scene. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then there was also, I think it was Rob Roy. I think that's...
Yeah, I saw Rob Boy. I saw Liam Neeson.
And there's a rape scene in that too. And I was just like, why do I gotta see this? Like, it's really depicted. Like, I'm like, I was like, gross. I just left. I get that sometimes in a story you're gonna have a rape.
My dad took me to see Rob Boy.
Oh Jesus!
I didn't have a choice of leaving that. I know.
Enjoy, son. no, but it's like. I understand sometimes that's part of the story, like a rape happens, but I don't need to see like the full thing, you know, like I don't need to see it all spelled out.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just movies like that, I kind of like don't watch. Like Clockwork Orange has stuff like that. And I don't, you know, I've never watched Clockwork Orange.
Neither have I.
Cause I knew that was in there. It's just that's gross. I don't need to see it. It's too, I mean, it's like, I know killing somebody, you know, I've seen plenty of horror movies, but I don't know. It's just weird. There's a couple movies I've walked out on. So,
I haven't walked out on any, but I wanted to walk out of Inglourious Basterds. The Hateful Eight. I hated it. It was like not a fun movie. I did not enjoy that. It was boring. And then it was just getting kind of like, just like, come on. Like, can we not talk about this? I don't know.
Can we not talk about this?
Like, I like Samuel Jackson. The part where he's like talking about like making the dude suck his dick. I'm like, I don't want to hear about this. Just no. Come on, dude. Like, stop it, please. Like, I like you, Samuel Jackson. I kind of like you a lot less now. Yeah. And it's a character part, but it's just like, come on. Did this, like, I don't know. It was just, come on. I mean, gay stuff happens. That's fine. I mean, that would do what. But it's just, it wasn't that it was gay. It was stripping a person of his humanity, basically.
Yeah, no, there's a difference there. It's not even. It leaves sexuality. It becomes like
Was abuse. Yeah. It was abuse to abuse someone and like, you know, make someone else also uncomfortable. It was, that's why it was there. It was just kind of like, yeah, come on,
right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like Pulp Fiction has that, like, but it happens so quickly. It's that, the rape scene of that one gangster, but it happens so fast, like, it's over before even, like,
it's over before you've processed what's happened.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Which,
and
which
not
is
that it makes it any better, but it's like you're not getting up and walking away just at that last minute. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Where it's like the same. It was like a drawn out scene where he just keeps talking about it and talking about it. I'm like, just okay. Like, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Anyways, anything else we want to say about Joker? I think we kind of like brought out everything. I brought up everything I want to say about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's an artfully done movie, and I guess there's nothing else that's going to be attached to it, even though it is like played out just like an origin film. Like there should be something else to come after it, but who knows? I don't know. It just, what are you doing, DC? What are you doing?
I wouldn't mind if they did something like this more often. That maybe they're not connected. It doesn't have to be like the Marvel Universe.
Sure. I mean, like, as long as they make good movies, but even when their stuff wasn't connected, it wasn't super great, like Green Lantern and...
Well, that's different.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just, like, other than the Dark Knight trilogy...
Well, I don't know. Wonder Woman was pretty good. Shazam was great.
But I mean, like, yeah. I mean, whether they're doing standalone stuff or trying to make a connected universe, they're striking out, I think, more often than they're making hits. You know what I mean?
I know.
So, I mean, like, I don't know. I'd rather them pick one way or the other and try to do justice.
And I think they picked Zack Snyder to do the first beginning movies with, you know, the Superman and the Superman versus Batman, all that stuff. It's like, it was a terrible choice.
Yeah.
He's not a terrible director. It's just he would have been better off just doing pure Batman movies.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, you know, they had him take on Superman. I was like, maybe not the best guy.
Yeah, probably not.
I think
I'm good on the Joker.
Joker's a good movie. Not a pick-me-up. Not something you're going to be happy after walking out of the theater. You're definitely going to be thinking about everything you just took in. So...
Yeah, sure.
But still, it has its merits, but it has its downfalls as well, for sure. So anyways, guys, our intro music is provided by David Wilkes. Our ending music is by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com, and they are on Twitter at Warp 11. And as you mentioned before last week, that they are coming out with a new album soon, so that's exciting.
Absolutely.
Ooh. You can find us at Synthaholics.com. You can also email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. Check out our YouTube channels at Synthaholics. You can tweet at us at Twitter. @SynthaholicDuo is the show's. I'm at Blackbird2004. David's at David_J_Duncan. And Holly is at Lunar Thistle. And come to our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/Synthaholics, and join the group and tell us what you thought of the Joker.
Yeah, if you get to see it, perfect. Let us know.
Let us know for sure. If you can, please go to Apple Podcasts now?
I believe so, yes.
And rate, review us there, or any of your any platform you listen to podcasts. If you can leave any reviews for us, that'd be gratefully be very grateful for that. And go to our Patreon.com/Synthaholics. And if you can throw us a little money, if you find the show valuable and you like hearing from us, a buck a month is not much to ask to help support the show.
Absolutely.
And as always, let your friends go and know about the show. Let your mentally ill friend who just can't stop laughing at the back of the bus know.
Let them know. They'll enjoy it because we like to laugh a lot too and help people laugh. And sometimes they're uncomfortable laughs.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in a sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. All right, do you want to start the show?
Yeah. We'll have silence for a second.
Okay.
No farting.
Can't make any promises.
I'm holding it in. Okay, shut up.